What have you made of this economic security strategy? Is it too much? Is it not enough? Is it exactly right?
Well, I guess there's two ways you can go at it. My initial reaction was that it was amazingly reckless. That in a time where the balance sheet of sovereigns is what is on the line, is that people are looking at nations and saying, how strong is your government? Where our dollar's just been crashed by 30% partly because we're an over-leveraged society with our $1 trillion of household debt. And with the world over, people talking about the lesson from this is too much debt. We've all got to live within our means. For the government to then come out and go, bang, mm-hmm. $10 billion, which will have to ultimately be borrowed, greater public sector borrowing. So I was thinking it's just outrageously irresponsible, and we should have been relying on interest rates. But then I saw the Harvey Norman sales figures today for the last 4 weeks, and they were down by 4.7%, which is a staggering drop, unprecedented. So consumer spending has gone over a cliff in the last month. Everyone is absolutely frightened. And putting some money in the pockets of people who really need it before Christmas makes sense.
Which are pensioners and carers, which is the major target. Pretty much half the money, half the $10 billion, goes to that group. Because I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's all going to those first-home buyers, but they're only getting $1.5 billion of the $10.4. But 4.8 goes to pensioners and carers, which was being discussed anyway, quite outside the current economic crisis, that there's something needs to be done. And I've had conversations on this program. In fact, we devoted an hour to it a few weeks ago. And the problems that pensioners and carers are going through, I don't think people understand until they're in the middle of it. So yeah. I don't think anyone begrudges that.
That's why there's bipartisan support. And that's why it probably sounds really mean for me to say it's irresponsible of the government. They're sort of separate issues.
Yeah.
But, totally agree with that argument. But just at a time where the government hasn't even identified how much their surplus will be smashed by collapsing equity prices and a dramatic downturn in activity and the bursting of the resources bubble. In other words, just looking at that, I was thinking that the government won't have a surplus at all.
Mm-hmm.
And to then come out and go, bang, here's $10 billion, it completely contradicts the whole narrative of the last year, which is we've built up a budget surplus, the coalition is irresponsible in the Senate. So Steve Fielding, on the one hand, is saying, we're going to let you raise taxes to man the barricades, to strengthen the federal government's balance sheet at a time when sovereigns like Iceland are falling over, and then to turn around and go, bang, $10 billion, just write a cheque.
Should they have then just gone the 4.8 to the pensioners and carers and not worried about the rest?
Well, I think the scale of it was too large, and I think they should have concentrated on interest rate cuts.
And you
need a new forecast on revenue. You need to know the damage to your revenue base before you write a cheque for $10 billion, would be my argument. And I think the other thing is that nations are going to need to build their productive capacity. And the thing that government should be doing, I think, is the nation-building infrastructure agenda. People say, yes, but the lead time is too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there would be a really good way to spend taxpayers' money now, which would be buying out a lot of the distressed public-private partnerships. So all these, Royal Children's Hospital, Bris Connections, they're all Connect East share price. They've all been smashed because they're these complex, opaque, heavily geared structures. And the states have run out of money to keep funding infrastructure deals, and they can't keep going to the private-public partnership. So the feds, from my point of view, should have come in and gone, here's Sugar Daddy, we'll take over the Royal Children's Hospital, we'll get it done for less, we won't have these expensive interest rates that ultimately just puts the whole hospital on the never-never of the credit card, which is symbolic of what the whole world's been going through.
But
everyone's been
having
a free lunch.
And you still then target the construction industry, which is obviously what they're trying to do with this anyway.
Yeah, so you scoop up for distressed prices all these infrastructure assets, which should be done by the state anyway, and then you fast-track the various state infrastructure projects, which are all falling over. I mean, New South Wales is borrowing $18 million a day. They can't do their $70 billion infrastructure program. So just write a cheque out and say, let's get this productivity building, much needed infrastructure moving now.
So put your treasurer hat on then, and is it simply that the reason that they've done this is because they see it as having an immediate impact?
Yeah, they are concerned about the shock of a financial collapse scaring the bejesus out of consumers to the point where Harvey Norman's just reported that real sales have fallen in real terms by 4.7%, and consumer spending has fallen off the cliff, and they need to get some things moving around the economy to stop mass job losses in retail and other areas, which then feeds through to greater mortgage stress. And the ultimate danger that Australia faces is with $1 trillion of household debt, people can't afford to lose their jobs.
No.
They'll be foreclosing out of their homes. And the biggest catastrophe we face is if housing prices fall by a third, which could happen if we're going to get to the equivalent housing prices. So that is the real fear. And so I think stimulating housing construction and purchasing, I think, is smart, because you've got to manage what should be a reduction in house prices, but manage it so there's no shock to the system. And I guess they want to stimulate consumption before Christmas. But it sort of misplays the broader message of, you know, Warren Buffett was just, I was reading him before on the web, leverage is the only way a smart guy can go broke. You know, basically, everyone's saying is, you know, the free lunch is over.
Yeah.
We all have to learn to live within our means. And rather than Kevin Rudd saying, we've got to stop borrowing $60 billion a year, we've got to get the $1 trillion of household debt down, it's here.
Here's
let's go on
handout.
Spending beyond our means. Let's go on borrowing and the big consumption dream.
Yes, because it's only, I think it finishes 30th of June next year. This is the small window of opportunity, which you can just imagine the, it'd be just like everyone heading out in their vans out to the west of the United States. Land! There'd be land!
Yes.
16 to 6. Should we talk to Sue? Hopefully she's still there. Sue, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Far away.
Yeah. Oh, look, why I rang originally was about the when I heard about the putting up the home, you know, the first home buyer's amount. I was like, because ages and ages and ages ago, somewhere on the ABC Empire, I heard a radio report, an analysis saying that basically when that happened, some factor of the price just went up by $7,000, just like a switch almost.
Yes.
It had been well, you know, it was really well detailed. And I thought, gee, guys, why don't you take it off the stamp duty to try, and even when you give the pensioners more money, if everything just goes up to gobble up the $30, I mean, how can we do it skillfully? That was my feeling.
That's an interesting point. Stephen, why not target it just simply at something like stamp duty to reduce that?
Well, the states are addicted to their stamp duty, more than $10 billion a year.
Because you're asking states to give up
$7 billion. Yeah, and the states have got very narrow revenue bases. The states are collectively borrowing more than $20 billion this year. They can't afford to surrender anything. They're chronically underfunded. And I agree with the point that previously, when John Howard introduced this around the time of the GST, then doubled it, it did inflate the bubble. But given that the bubble has burst the world over, and given that there's this $1 trillion of leverage in Australia and on Australian households, the thing we have to manage is we have to manage house prices down. So I think this is not about, you know, the worry of setting them up. It's about hopefully massaging them down more gently
than
they would have been. I mean, there was fears of a housing crash. If you look what happened in the UK and the US, and so I think they will come down. They should come down, but the falling interest rates and things like this package will hopefully sort of make the drop more manageable.
There's a text message that says, does the financial assistance package have bipartisan support from the opposition? According to Malcolm Turbin-Horsbeck earlier today, it does. And you're in a difficult political situation if you're going to come out and say, we bag that.
It was a bit reckless of the opposition initially to go out advocating the whole increased in pensioner payments, slashing of the petrol excise. And I think a lot of people argue they gave up their dominance and their credibility, or some of their credibility on economic management, by advocating, you know, more sort of Howard government-style handouts, which is which what Kevin Rudd came out and said that he doesn't do anymore. And so, of course, and you just can't in any political environment come out and say, we don't believe we should be giving help to people who most need it. And pensioners are a massive constituency, and the OECD figures do show that we do underpay our pensioners relative to other rich countries. But equally, we were talking about Ford before. There are millions of former Ford and General Motors pensioners out there, former workers, who are worried about their pensions because people are talking about Ford and General Motors going broke. So it's all about, at the end of the day, a capacity to pay, a nation's capacity to be compassionate. I guess that gets back to my earlier point that I would rather Australia have a far more in foreign reserves. At the moment, we've only got $30 billion of foreign reserves, which is the 37th biggest in the world, far less than the rest of Asia. You know, we just haven't saved money, and the Howard government took $25 billion of dividends out of the Reserve Bank. And if it came down to a run on our currency and the need to take over banks or to help fund some of the $120 billion of foreign loans that are coming up in the next 12 months, I would want a federal government in this environment to be as cashed up as possible.
Yeah.
And instead, we're getting here's 10 bill we don't need.
Stephen Mayne is with you and me this afternoon, 774 ABC Melbourne, shareholder activist that he is. Speaking of the global situation, the last couple of days we've seen some significant rebounds with the, what did you call it? Something about a cat, sometimes the
dead cat bounce.
That's it. It's the dead cat
it's
bounce.
Not, well, the cat is dead and it bounces and immediately, but then it remains dead.
Yes.
So,
is this a dead cat bounce?
I don't think so. I mean, we've had $25 trillion US wiped off the value of stocks around the world. We've recovered about just under $5 trillion of that in the last 2 days. We've still taken a $20 trillion haircut there in global wealth, and that is unprecedented. And so even if we go up another 5 or 10%, it's still a massive correction, wipeout of wealth. In the Australian context, the market fell by $95 billion on Friday, and it's clawed back the $95 billion almost precisely over the last 2 days. So it needs to come back a lot further for for confidence for investors to be restored. And the bottom line is that we are seeing a nationalisation of the global banking system. The Americans will come out tonight, I think it's about 11:30 our time, and will announce they are following the British lead and buying up probably preference shares in a whole range of their major banks. So, and we've seen overnight the Brits have, I mean, I love the fact they've got a Scottish Prime Minister who's just bailed out the two Edinburgh-based giant. I mean, what's the what happened to the canny, tight sort of Scottish banker? I mean, it's the two Edinburgh banks, the Royal Bank of Scotland and HBOS, which went maddest of all. And so much for the, you know, I can't do a Scottish accent.
Let's get David Scotson in here and he could practice.
Maybe he could explain it. How do the Scots, you know, don't call them miserly, but, you know, the legend of the Scottish banker, you know, sensible and, you know, responsible. And basically Royal Bank of Scotland did the world's biggest investment banking takeover, paid more than $100 billion for ABN AMRO and basically went broke. And so now the British government's got 63% of it. They've just put $50 billion Australian dollars into it. They've sacked the chairman and the CEO and everyone's sort of gasping, and this is happening around the world. So I think the crisis is over. Friday was the low point, but there will be enormous psychological damage. You will never see the finance sector return. To call yourself a banker is now worse than to call yourself a journalist.
Thanks, and, or a shareholder activist.
Or a used car salesman. you're going to see a massive backlash against banks, against executive pay, fat cats, corporate greed, unregulated markets. And one line I read on the web this afternoon, I think it was Newsweek, was the Reagan-Thatcher era of ever-advancing markets is at an end.
There you go.
There was too much greed and not enough fear.
Yes, patently so. Finally, what about the dollar? We've had a nice rebound on that today on the back of the federal government's announcement and also interest rate cuts. What will we get?
I think that was very important. I mean, the dollar going from 98 to 64 was basically saying we were a third world economy.
We're a banana republic.
And the capacity to keep cutting interest rates is based upon not having a currency in free fall. So to get back above 70 cents today was very, very important. And I think you will see another 100 basis points cut next month, which is desperately needed for the over-leveraged nation that we are. So pray that the dollar stays above 70, stays strong, because that will be an important determinant as to the amount of future interest rate cuts we can get. Because when we owe the world $600 billion, we've got to keep interest rates higher than the rest of the world average to keep the money in here for the risk premium that the world associates with a highly leveraged, highly cyclical, you know, resources bubbles, income up and down economy, which Australia is.
Derek Gill, good evening.
Top of the evening to you both. I can't help thinking about those wise words of John Kenneth Galbraith.
Mm-hmm.
Economic forecasting was invented to make astrology look good.
As I said, Pluto is in Capricorn. That's the best explanation of the crisis that I have heard over the last 12 months.
It's interesting that the Banana Republic comment, how much of it is in fact anti the Australian dollar or because of fears of the Australian dollar, and how much was in fact that traditional seeking the safe haven places like the yen those places, it's not that we're so bad, it's just that
others were better.
The gut reaction is we've got to go somewhere safe.
Mm. Well, everyone took their money home. And whilst the American state, a lot of people argue it's broke with its $10 trillion debt and half a trillion dollar budget surplus. So the individuals, the corporates, the university endowments are still extremely rich. Mm. And they have $5 trillion US invested in foreign equity markets. So what you actually saw, and the Japanese are the biggest lender to Australia in terms of they borrow cheap in Japan and then they put their money on deposit here. So what drove the dollar down, particularly last week, was the Japanese and the Americans taking their money home in a time of crisis when their markets were falling by 20% and people were getting margin call, they needed their money back home. Plus, we were viewed as a risky economy with our current account deficit and our $1 trillion debt. Plus, people were saying, well, the commodities bubble has burst. Where's your income, Australia? You're too risky, we're out.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of John Kenneth Galbraith's point. We can talk about it after the event. We can sort of tell why things happened.
Now. Which is
why it's interesting to be able to say, which we'll talk about tonight, our gut reactions to the Prime Minister's announcement today. About our reaction from a macroeconomic sense, the big picture stuff. Is this the sort of incentive that the Australian economy requires? Will it have the desired effect? And also down to how it's going to affect me if you're a pensioner, what will happen to you? Does this make a difference to you? Will it mean you'll ease off on the political pressure on the government to undertake its review of pension systems quicker than had been planned?
I've had a text earlier today that simply said it'll mean, Lindy, that next winter, if it's still going, which it will be, this doesn't cut off at 2009, I'll be able to have heating. And that kind of put it into some sort of perspective.
It is also interesting that there aren't that many eligible pensioners out there who have got large share portfolios.
No.
So the people who've been wiped out, or they weren't in superannuation, because super came in after they reached retirement age. So the people who've been most hit in this crisis haven't been directly targeted with the stimulus. So maybe a $1,000 into every superannuation account of every worker, something like that, would have directly targeted the victims of this wipeout.
Thank you very much, Derek. See you after 7. Stephen, thank you.
Thanks, Lindy.
See you next week. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. My name's Lindy Burns. Thanks for being around. I'll see you tomorrow from 3.